Well, in understanding millennials, we need to understand their parents. And when I think about that, I think about this new generation of parents and their response to how they were parented and the hopes and aspirations that they have for their children. And so a group of parents, meaning well, had children between the years of 1982 and 2004, which is where Strauss and Howe look at the millennial generation being born. I know there's different variations on thought of that, but this new generation of parents, I think, is documented well by Tim Elmore in his book, Generation IY, Secrets to Connecting with Today's Teens and Young Adults in the Digital Age. And so he has different names for these types of parents and how they responded. And a lot of it was just out of love, or where how they were raised, or a response, or a hope for how they will do better than their parents. He talks about this in this book, and he talks about this new generation of parents, and he says, I believe we not only have a new generation of kids on our hands today, but we also have a new generation of parents. I have not seen a more engaged batch of parents since I began working with students more than 35 years ago. And I can say the same myself. I was one of those parents. And as I was a youth pastor, I would be working with many of the children that were born at that time. Most of the moms and dads I meet really want to be good parents. In fact, some are paranoid about being a bad dad or a monster mom. Some are reacting to the negative parenting style of their own parents, and some simply don't want their kids hating them when they're 30. Whatever the reason, many of the boomer and Gen X parents that he's met and he heard from concerning educators have become enthralled by the art of parenting. And that engagement has conditioned them to make their kids almost their obsessive focus. These kids are their trophies. Parents will do anything for them, including protect them from consequences and run interference with anyone who challenges them. In fact, according to a recent MetLife poll, K-12 teachers say that parents have become their number one professional headache. Neil Howe and William Strauss, writing about how we arrived at that place over the 30 years, points to this. In September 1982, the first Tylenol scare led to parental panic over trick-or-treating. Halloween suddenly found itself encased in hotlines, advisories, and statutes, a fate that would soon befall many other once in it innocent child pastimes, from bicycle riding to BB guns. I remember when I was a young man growing up, kid, the thought of wearing a helmet while I was bike riding just seemed so dumb. And now it's just expected. In fact, when I see kids that without it, it kind of catches me off guard because of the fact that I'm so used to the fact of them not having when I was growing up, or having them now. As Generation Y, or the millennials, began to be born first to boomer and then to Gen X parents, kids became top priorities. The era of the wanted child had begun. At the same time, through the 1980s, national coverage about dangers to children reached a new high. Behaviors such as divorce and child abuse, abortion, violent crime, alcohol consumption, sex trafficking, and illegal drugs, as well as safety concerns about everything from Venetian blinds to peanut butter. The protection of children was so dominant that if a parent took a child to the emergency room for an injury, they could expect a visit from the Department of Children and Family Services. The well-being of children began to dominate the national debate. Reports began coming out in the mid-1980s that confirmed our concerns, and the era of the protected child dawned. By the early 1990s, elementary school kids were in the spotlight, and in the years between 1986 and 1991, periodicals for children doubled. In the 90s, the popularity of TV shows like Sesame Street, Barney and Friends, and Blue's Clues all skyrocketed. During the 1996 presidential campaign, both Bob Dole and Bill Clinton referred to soccer moms as a major voting demographic they cared about. Kids were the all-important possession to care for. The era of the worthy child had begun. and by the late 1990s, the first wave of these much-wanted children passed through high school, accompanied by enormous parental, educational, and media fascination. When asked about their parenting skills, parents gave themselves an A or a B, but they gave all other parents a D or F. This tells us how much effort parents felt they were giving their kids and how often they compared their efforts to the efforts and the results of other families. After the 1991 Columbine High School massacre was replayed over and over again on TV, parental obsession with their kids reached a fever pitch. Many parents pulled their kids out of public schools and put them in private, or they homeschooled them for safety's sake. Kid safety and achievement were the focus as the era of the perfected child moved into full swing. In 2010, two of three parents defined the American dream as leaving their children financially better off than they were. This evolution of events has produced a new generation of parents more focused on their children than anything else in their lives. At times, however, I wonder if this absorption with kids is entirely healthy. I met with a parent recently who symbolizes what I'm talking about. She is a wonderful woman who cares deeply for her son. In fact, it's safe to say that her son is her prized possession. She will drop everything to meet his needs. She'll break her back to help him succeed and reach his goals. His mother has launched a wonderful nonprofit organization and put her son in charge of the cause. He has been able to raise thousands of funds for her, dollars for her, his cause. He has even appeared on radio and TV to promote his cause. It's obvious he loves his cause, or maybe I should say her cause, because I'm not sure whose dream it is. He is a spokesman for the organization, but whenever a question comes up, he defers to his mom. She is doing all the work behind the scenes, and it just makes me wonder, is she living out her life through him? And so there's damaging parenting styles. And so let's look at some of those today. Helicopter parents. These are the parents that have already been described at times, the ones who hover over their kids, making sure they get every imaginable advantage and are protected from every imaginable danger. This kind of parent has gotten a lot of press in the past decade due to its prevalence. In fact, they've now evolved into what some educators call snowplow parents. Like a snowplow, they barge in or push through anything in their way in order to reach the goal of aiding their children. These hovering helicopters can be controlling and obsessive in their efforts to ensure that everything goes well for their children and that no negative incident affects their self-esteem or their prospects. There's times where even we've heard about a parent who called her son's college president to ask him to make sure her son wore his sweater that day. They find it difficult to trust that their child can grow without their connections and controls. So they call every day during school. Some even accompany their child to college and have a hard time leaving. Sadly, helicopter parents can damage their kids because they don't allow them the privilege of learning to fail and persevere. The butterfly of childhood that emerges dark and deformed. The child of a helicopter parent might not develop their strength for life's hardships, and ironically, because of their loving parents. It's a fine line between healthy and unhealthy leadership there. Parents should be involved in their kids' lives and concerned about their welfare, but in the words of an article that I read, there's a difference between mothering and smothering, fathering and bothering. Sometimes love and leadership requires that we step back and allow children to spread their wings and to fly and to even fall. Well, this is the problem. Hovering helicopter parents don't allow their kids the privilege of learning to fail and persevere. They prefer to prepare the child for the path for the child instead of the child for the path. And here's the issue. It's very possible parents can become helicopters because they possess a controlling spirit. Adults who struggle with feeling out of control or who find it difficult to trust others tend to hover and micromanage as parents. They feel it is up to them to ensure life turns out well for the kids. When these parents were children, they were either kicked to the curb or told to figure life out, or they were latchkey kids in solitude. These adults, quite frankly, must learn that control is a myth, and the sooner they acknowledge this, the more effective they'll be as parents. You have to face this issue from time to time, and children are going to enter a world where they can't depend on us to make everything right. So it's nice to watch them make their own decisions and live with the outcomes without our involvement. Here's the paramount truth. The further out I can see into the future, the better the decision I can make as a parent. And so the most important things that parents can teach their children is how to get along without them. So that's helicopter parents. Another group is called the karaoke parents. Like karaoke patrons who grab a mic and try to sing like Barry Manilow did in 1974, karaoke parents attempt to sound like their child, dress like their child, and talk like their child. They hunger to be a buddy to their kids and emulate this younger generation. We live in a culture that is obsessed with staying young, looking young, and acting young. And karaoke parents fall for this obsession, hook, line, and sinker. Whether it's cosmetic or attitudinal, these parents will do what they think they have to do in order to come across like they're still on the cutting edge of cool. They don't like the thought of being out of style, and they work hard to maintain an up-to-date image. There's nothing inherently wrong about that. It just creates confusion with children. They wonder, is that adult just my cool older buddy or my leader and example? More seriously, karaoke parents may not offer kids the boundaries and authority they desperately need. You can read about a mother who allowed her daughter to have a house full of friends over, all minors. She allowed them to drink alcohol and even bought it for them. Several became completely inebriated and damaged the house and neighborhood. The police were called and a mess had to be cleaned up. Why did that mom say yes to that party? Well, she wanted her daughter to feel like she trusted her. She wanted the daughter to like her and was willing to take big risks to accomplish that goal. And in the process, she risked both her daughter's immediate and long-term well-being so mom would not feel any rejection or resentment from her daughter. Well, here's the problem with karaoke parents. They often don't provide their kids the clear parameters that build security and self-esteem. They're more concerned with being liked than being respected. And this is the issue with karaoke parents. Parents often assume that the karaoke style because of their own emotional insecurities. They may worry about aging or struggle with the need to be liked or feel uncomfortable with adult responsibilities. And those adults will rationalize why they do what they do. But in the end, the only remedy is for them to embrace their own age and stage in life. And they have to relate to the young people in an appropriate manner and focus on the kids' needs more than their own. The truth is, kids have plenty of peers. What they need are parents they can look up to and respect. Well, next group is the dry cleaner parents. We take our wrinkled or soiled clothes to the dry cleaner to have them cleaned and pressed by professionals. It's so handy to drop them off and have them handed back to us looking like new. That's essentially what dry cleaner parents do with their children. They don't feel equipped to raise them, so they drop them off for experts to fix them. Frequently, these parents will be from a double-income home where both parents are either too busy for their kids or just don't feel gifted to work with them. They're also accustomed to a culture that allows them to drop any possession off to a professional for cleanup, correction, or repair. Their car, their clothes, their broken watch, and their children. Although the home environment may have spoiled or damaged their child's character or psyche, they hope a school counselor, soccer team, or church youth group can fix the damage. Plus, if something goes wrong, they have someone to blame. Accustomed to delegating responsibility, dry cleaner parents assume they can delegate their most sacred trust, their kids. Sadly, they fail to see that raising kids is a learning experience for all of us, but it's a vital task that demands the investment of time and effort and presence. A few years ago, I met with a teacher who reported the mothers of her young students are nearly all stay-at-home moms, but they often drop their kids off for extended hours. They do it because they just aren't ready for the responsibility of caring for them or because their kids are interfering with what they want to do, shopping, tennis, golf, whatever. They may leave their kids at the school for 10 hours a day, just like dry cleaning. Well, here's the problem. Dry cleaner parents don't furnish their kids with the mentoring and personal face-to-face time they need. They prefer to pass the buck and abdicate their parenting responsibility as well as the opportunity to deepen their relationship with their son or daughter. And here's the issue. Some of these parents delegate their responsibility because they feel that connecting with kids is just not their specialty. They may have inadequacy or identity issues, or they just don't feel up to the task of parenting. Others are just self-centered and oblivious. actually, they find it to be too much work to connect with their kids. So they hide behind an array of activities, including the jobs that enable them to pay for their child's interest. They use the excuse that if they keep their children busy, it will keep them out of trouble. These parents need to run toward the very challenge in which they feel they're weak. They may also need to examine their schedules and their priorities to make room for actually relating to the children they are raising. Relationships make it all happen. Parents must build bridges of relationship that can bear the weight of truth. Well, we also can look at volcano parents. Not really talking about parents with anger issues here, although there are certainly plenty of those, and kids do pay the price of parents who are out of control. But the volcanoes that are talked about here represent a particular variety of over-involved parents who erupt suddenly, without warning, over relatively minor issues. Because they are so invested with their children, their frustration level seems to remain at a constant simmer. These are the parents who will write papers or do homework for their children, then storm into the school office when the child receives a poor grade. Why are they erupting? Because the boundaries between them and their children have become fuzzy. They want so much for their children to succeed because that child is their last hope of leaving some sort of name or legacy for themselves. They have unrealized dreams or baggage that they never dealt with in a healthy way. These unresolved issues have built up for years and will erupt when provoked. And sadly, these parents provide neither the model nor the healthy environment that young people need. Not only do they prevent kids from learning to do their work, they also teach their children inappropriate ways of handling frustration. All too easily, the offspring of volcano parents develop their own volcanic tendencies. And another unfortunate result of this style is that they can lead to counterproductive relationship with educators. Parents and teachers become adversaries instead of allies, and the children get caught in the middle. That's the opposite of the scenario when I was growing up. When I got in trouble at school, I knew I'd be in even more trouble once my parents found out about it. My parents saw themselves as partners with the schools and teaching me responsibility, and they would back up the teacher's efforts. Today, if a kid gets in trouble and the parents find out, they often march down to the school and make trouble for the teacher. They tend to assume their child is right and want to defend him or her against other adults at the school, little league ballpark, or piano studio. Rather than working together, the parents and teachers quibble over the kid, who basks in the influence they leverage with these adults. Well, here's the problem. These parents still have unrealized dreams from their past, sometimes an unhealthy past, and try to fulfill them through their children. They have also issues with self-control and fuzzy boundaries between themselves and their children. And the issue is this: the child represents the best way for the parent to accomplish the dream he or she gave up on years earlier. Even if it's vicariously done, their behavior is often the result of past baggage. The best step these adults can take is self-care. They must address their own emotional health and deal with their own issues so they don't further damage a child in their wake. Once again, kids have a better chance of growing up if their parents do so first. The best way we can help kids become healthy leaders is to model it for them. Well, here's another one, the dropout parents. And we all know what a dropout is. It's a student who fails to finish high school or college. Dropouts decide along the way that school isn't really for them, so they quit. In the same way, many parents become dropouts. They may start the parenting journey excited about their new baby, but along the way, they realize parenting is hard. Sometimes it feels impossible. It isn't like they'd imagined. It's hard work, so at some point, they simply give up or drop out. Whether they leave physically, emotionally, or financially, they quit in the effort to raise their kids. Over the last 25 years, we've all heard the term deadbeat dads. This is often the topic of the Dr. Phil show. Sometimes it's the mom who flies the coop in search of a more fulfilling life. Other times the parent will remain in the home but stops engaging the children in any meaningful way. In any case, the adult will model for their kids that they can't pay the price, so they choose not to finish what they started. And you've met these kinds of parents. When the subject comes up, they either sink into guilt and make excuses, or they quickly throw up a defense like, oh, my kids were old enough that they didn't really need me anymore. In both cases, the remarks ring hollow. I know because I've met their kids. Those children, now old enough to figure out what happened, resent their dropout parent. Even if they still love them or pity them, they have no respect for them. In many cases, the child is more mature than the parent. More often than not, the dropout parents stay around physically but cut out emotionally. They shift into neutral and don't try to lead anymore. They focus on other priorities, feeling a bit like a loser when it comes to good parenting. They decide to play a game they can win. The problem with this is the parent fails to provide a healthy role model of finishing what they start. In some cases, they fail to provide the tools their child needs. And here's the issue, and it may seem obvious, except for rare exceptions, it appears to be a case of children having children. And I'm not necessarily talking about teen parents. The parent wasn't really healthy or mature enough to have children in the first place. They have no business entering into that kind of responsible role. They aren't even able to lead their own lives well, much less help a child launch into the world. These parents must ask themselves, why did I want a child in the first place? Was it because of my own need for affection I hoped the child would give me in return? Did I hope that a child would help my marriage hold together? Parenting out of one's own need usually costs a lot, and the child is the one who pays the ultimate price. The best course for this parent is to seek counseling and discover what's happening inside, to find out why they're unable to lead their child in a healthy way. Then they should re-engage as a parent, beginning with an apology. Well, another one is the bullied parents. When you think about this, these parents, in the same way that a bully picks on weaker kids at school and requires intervention on the part of a teacher principal, bullied parents are those who have been exhausted by their own kids. They are whipped parents. Having been beaten and worn down, these parents have given up on discipline. In response to their own children's strong will or repeated rebellion, they have opted to surrender their role of authority and adopt a laissez-faire position. Although they are not happy in the defeat of their parenting goals, they find solace in the cessation of hostilities. Life seems better once they stop resisting. Peace comes by simply allowing their kids to control situations, drive the family decisions, and basically do as they wish with virtually no consequences. These parents are often counting the days until their children leave home. Unfortunately, the children will leave ill-equipped for the world they enter. They're used to calling the shots. They have not learned self-discipline, and their attitude toward authority may prevent them from keeping a job. And unlike home, the world won't let them have their own way, and they'll suffer for it because mom and dad have failed to furnish boundaries or teach them respect for authority. And we can see that with many of the millennials that are so used to getting their way, and they're shocked when things don't go their way. And the problem with this is these parents lack the courage and strength to lead their strong-willed children and prepare them for potentially harsh adult world. The children are leaderless. And the issue, in some ways, the issues of these parents can resemble those of the karaoke parent. They may fail to lead their children, become whipped due to their intense desire to be liked and accepted by their child. This bullied parent scenario is likely when the child's personality is stronger than mom or dad's. The more stubborn personality is likely to fight battles that the weaker personality will simply concede to keep the peace. And that kind of parent must find some allies, a counselor or a parent support group, in order to develop some backbone. They must determine what values will govern their family and choose to fight these values. Choosing your battle is a term often used to refer to times when we choose not to fight over a trivial matter, but it also means that sometimes we do choose to fight worthwhile battles to uphold what is important. This is a lesson that bully parents must take to heart. A couple more. Groupie parents. Do you remember the term groupie? It's usually been associated with rock stars. Groupies are the devoted fans, often women, who idolize their favorite performers. They travel in groups following their favorite performers and doing whatever they can do to be close to them. Groupie parents do the same thing with their children. They view their children as stars who are to be honored and served, having their every whim catered to on a daily basis. And groupie parents make sure they are available to applaud at any possible moment. These parents never miss a performance or fail to show up for a PTA meeting. They're great volunteers as long as their children benefit directly from their attention. They're often the stage moms or the infamous pageant parents. What they long for most of all is to bask in the presence of their glorious offspring. Over the past years, you've read about the mom who dressed up like her daughter to take a big state exam for her, or the parent who filed a bullying complaint against an opponent when her son's football team lost big time during a Friday night high school football game. And then there's one that is unbelievable but true. Parents who hired disabled victims confined to a wheelchair to join their family so they could gain special privileges at Walt Disney World and push their kids to the front of the line. These parents might even spiritualize the issue by saying, "These children are precious gifts, blessings from heaven, and I'm called to serve them and provide for them as they grow up under my care." Those statements are true, but groupie parents fail to see the other side of this reality. Their children are entrusted to them to raise, to become mature, contributing adults. We parents are stewards of our kids. We only have them for so many years. Although the years seem to be increasing, our role is to equip them to be, give back to society, to improve the world for having been in it. Because the child of a groupie parent, in essence, becomes an idol. The groupie parent's approach is almost that of worship. What the child wants, the child gets. More than merely being spoiled, the child is venerated as the center around which the family revolves. And so this is what goes on. Well, here's the problem. These parents fail to recognize these kids need leaders, not servants. They enjoy their precious moments with their children, but they fail to equip them for the future. There's the issue. This type of parenting style is often a reaction to the past experience. Due to the absence or neglect of their own parents, they may swing the pendulum to the other extreme, determining to never miss any milestone their child experiences. This motivation in itself is noble. The problem lies in their failure to see the big picture. By lavishing too much time and attention on a child and never denying the child anything, groupie parents can increase that child's self-image to an unhealthy level. How could anyone surrounded by groupies avoid becoming bloated with self-importance? And sadly, these kids who are used to being the center of attention may never learn to function when this spotlight goes off. They may also become relationship disabled, unable to manage the give and take for a healthy relationship. These parents must work to grasp the reality that loving their children means treating them as people, not idols. It means learning to say no when appropriate and requiring them to serve others, as well as learning to work well even when the focus is not on them. And perhaps the best gift any married parents can give their kids is to keep that marriage healthy. The kids will be happiest when they know they're a welcome addition to a family, not the center of family life. Lastly is the commando parents. These parents have been around for centuries. They've been frequently called military parents because of their authoritative style. This parenting style is almost always well-intentioned, but it can cause damage when it offers more rules than relationship. In this style, one or more parent adopts the role of a drill sergeant who expects perfection from both parent and child. Alan Vihe, professor at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, worries that society is beginning to see the duty of parenting as making perfect children rather than in terms of uncalculating nurturance. Instead of flexing with the messes that come with raising kids, these parents demand perfectly clean rooms, perfectly diligent study habits, perfect performances at sports and academics, even perfect behavior at playtime. The discipline imposed by commando parents is not bad in itself. In fact, it can be a breath of fresh air in light of the many other damaging parenting styles, and it can be a very helpful in preparing children for the practical demands of the world. Often, culture refers to this parenting style as the tiger mom or dad world. Often, culture refers to this who's determined to build discipline into the home and ensure their child succeeds, that they run their home by strict rules and regulation. And what's wrong with that typically offers law without grace. It's about rules and routine and can produce a child who's afraid of anything short of straight A's on a report card. This would lead sometimes to deception on the part of the young person, on the part of the child, because they don't want to let the parent down. And so they think they have a great relationship with their kids because on the surface it's all behaving just right. But behind the scenes, the imperfect kid that knows they're imperfect will keep up appearances to look a certain way. This friend one time talks about how his dad used to play ball with him in his backyard, and the man would challenge his son to catch every pitch perfectly 50 times in a row. Then the kid would purposely throw the last pitch in the dirt, preventing the boy from meeting the challenge. His dad's logic, he didn't want his son to ever stop shooting for perfection. It's a good goal, it's a horrible method. This man now struggles with a poor sense of identity and feeling that no matter how hard he tries, he will never measure up. An all too common fallout of commando parenting. Here's the problem. These parents focus on attaining compliance and perfection instead of growth and improvement. Their children may live in anxiety, frustration, or exhaustion, just trying to meet expectations. Kids will either fall into a performance trap or they will rebel. Rules without relationship usually leads to rebellion. And lastly, the issue here is commando parents have their own issues. Perhaps they never felt love or approval while they were growing up. Maybe the only model for parenting they know is a drill sergeant who pushes and pushes the child to perform. The commando parents that we know about feel their own reputations depend on their children's performance. They cannot stand a poor showing on the Little League field or in the classroom between because they feel it makes them look bad. So they need to watch other families, consider other models, look for opportunities to practice being less rigid, and take baby steps toward flexibility. They need to see that life is about love and empowerment, not command and control. High standards are good as long as they fit the young person and are balanced with equal levels of responsiveness to what the young person needs. And so as you look at this millennial generation and try to understand them, the thing that is the marked difference isn't that kids have changed, but that parents have changed. When you see the kid that has been acting up a certain way, sometimes it is that individual. Sometimes the parents did a great job and a kid is just acting rebellion. But other times, they're just a reflection of what they grew up with. And so we've got different aspects of parenting. So that's a good question to ask yourself as you look at your millennial or you look at other millennials. Where did they come from? What happened? Any good? Great. Any bad? Well, not so great. And so it causes us to reflect on that. And now millennials, as they start to parent, are going to either rebel from what they think didn't work for them, where a parent wasn't there for them, or they will emulate and respond in the same way. So that's something to think about as we're trying to understand millennials.